So, the inspiration for this service came from Deb Lehman, as so much inspiration does. I was going to do it on a different topic, and she said, well, wait a minute, Mardi Gras is coming up then. You know, can we do something that's tying in? I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And I started looking up Mardi Gras, which I really didn't know much about. I'm sure most of you do, that, you know, it's the day before Ash Wednesday, and apparently, it's what the internet tells me, you know, that the fat part is about kind of anticipating the season of Lent, when in some traditions some pieces of Christianity, you restrict what you eat, you might fast. In any case, the idea is it's kind of a celebration of all of the richness and fat that you might eat in life before you go into this period of reflection. And so I started thinking about celebrations and what that's like. And I was thinking about celebration, especially in difficult times, because right now, as many of you know, it's not the easiest time to be on the planet, no matter where you are, especially, you know, if you're somebody who cares about kind of how things are going in our country. And you wonder, like, how can I celebrate when these wars are devastating people everywhere? How can I celebrate when, you know, we've got authoritarian violence, you know, in our own streets? How can I celebrate in February? Right, when it's cold and it's dark and there's not enough light and all that stuff, and so should we be celebrating? Can I celebrate? What does it mean about me if I do celebrate? And of course, as soon as I started thinking about this, I realized my own issues around celebration, which basically I have an approach avoidance relationship. I believe in my head that we should really celebrate our joys, just like Karen was talking about in her meditation last week. You know, like, celebrating our joys is a really good thing, but I also feel kind of like it's sort of suspect. You know, that celebrating is really something that brings me discomfort for several reasons. I mean, I think the first one is, there's something about in me that feels like being happy is kind of immoral. I'm not sure why. You know, I mean, again, I live in a country founded by Puritans, so why is that surprising? I don't know. My two sides of my family are Unitarian and Jewish. Both traditions bring plenty of guilt, so okay, I guess that makes sense. So I got to kind of deal with the suspicion around joy and happiness that way. And I also seem to have this kind of superstition that I am not proud of and I don't like very much, but you know, I have this, it's really kind of a massively egocentric sort of thing. It's where I feel like if I am too happy, there's like a cosmic balance that will be disrupted, like the force, and then bad things will happen. You know, I mean, on the one hand, it's like, you know, oh, I can't believe we've made all the lights on the way out of Meadville, right? You know what's going to happen if I say that, you know, so red lights are going to come. But it extends into other areas, too. Some of you may know, many of you may know, Jennifer and I got married just a few weeks ago. And in that process of preparing for that event and being, I just realized how invested in it I was and how much I really, really wanted to be married to her and how much I value our relationship. And it was a really joyous event for me. And immediately after we did that, I just got seized by all kinds of fears, you know? Like, oh, and now that we've got that, now I'm going to get some dread disease and die, you know? I understand these things are real, but also in my mind, it's totally... way out of control, you know, and it is part of my experience of life. There's expansion, there's contraction, but it's specifically around if I let myself be too happy, oh my God, what's going to happen next? We've been around 4 weeks now. So far, we're still here. It's great. I also have a feeling like if I allow myself to kind of show joy, happiness, kind of uninhibitedness, I feel pretty exposed. You may not know this about me, but I am very introverted, and I have a deep strain of kind of inhibition. I remember when I was in high school, I thought, I had this joke that I always said to myself. I don't think I said it to anybody else because nobody else thought it was funny, but I thought it was really funny, where I would imagine the annual meeting of the Restraint Society is being held next week. All seats are reserved. I think that's hilarious, right? His feet's reserved. Anyway, so I like, Anyway, but it, so the whole idea of celebrating doesn't come naturally to me. You know, I just feel like it's easier to be held back, you know, and to be reserved. But clearly, celebration is a natural part of being alive. I should not let my discomfort stop me from investigating it. So I have been thinking about it, and I think the way I'm understanding it now, there's kind of three levels of celebration that I kind of understand. Like the first one is celebration as coping, as a way to get yourself through hard times. Very much like what we heard in the joys and sorrows, you know, the stories of like people in the face of difficult life events using humor and joy to kind of help them get through. There was a comic strip called Doonesbury that many of you may remember. Oh my God, I've read Doonesbury faithfully for years, and in 1989, during the AIDS epidemic, there's one character named Andy Lippincott, and Andy came down with AIDS, and his friend Joni Caucus would visit him in the hospital, and he would make all these jokes about like how his sarcomas, the lesions on his skin didn't match his hospital pajamas, and how upset he was by that, and how he wanted the cast of Cheers to be the pallbearers at his funeral, you know, and at one point she says to him, Andy, how can you joke about this? And he says, how can you not? You know, so it's, you know, that level you can really use as a personal coping technique. And I think this is why, virtually every winter festival that I know about, religious and non-religious, has fire and light in it. You know, Christmas trees, and you know, Diwali has that, and Hanukkah has that. So there's always the light that kind of helps us remember that the light will come again. I don't know if you've been recently, like this last winter season, on Route 198 in Sagertown, where that big curve is, and there's that one house that's completely out of control. I mean, you could power a city with what they're doing out there. I find that so joyous. It just gives me inspiration. It's completely tacky and lovely. I love it. There's so much stuff they've got going, the inflatables and the lights and everything. It's great. So that's kind of one level of celebration. Another is, frankly, celebration as defiance. You know, it's kind of signaling that you can, you know, my capacity for love, for joy, for connection with others cannot be taken away. And so in a time like this, when we're living in a country, in my view anyway, where democracy is being kind of dismantled by the very people we elected to protect it, you know, we have to sort of figure out how are we going to respond. And if we let ourselves be completely devoured by the negativity that's out there, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on, if we let ourselves believe that there's no joy possible, or that the future is bleak, or that no one can be trusted and there's nothing to celebrate, well then, you know, then the people who are trying to tell you how to live your life have won. So if they take away the possibility of celebration and joy, then they sap the energy that we could be using to create an alternative to the world that they want to build. This is, at least in my understanding, this is a big part of what what pride parades are about. You know, it's like you can tell us you don't like us, you can tell us you don't want us working in your companies or living in your housing developments, but you cannot stop us from celebrating who we are. That's kind of the impetus behind that. I love that. Keeping that spark of joy in us alive and letting ourselves open to the connections that we feel when we're doing that, these are effective methods of resistance because they remind us of a world that can be rather than just the world that the powers that be are trying to convince us is the only one possible. And then I think there's celebration as spiritual practice. And, you know, Adrienne Marie Brown, who wrote the words that I said earlier, she talks a lot about what I was just saying, the sort of celebration as defiance, but she also goes on to say more, and I'll just reread the last sentence that I read to you earlier. Pleasure, she says, is what our bodies, our human systems, are structured for. It's the aliveness and awakening, the gratitude and humility, the joy and celebration of being miraculous. And I love that. It's not just seeing miraculous things, it's being miraculous, which in a way, we kind of are, just the fact that we're here. for me anyway, that feeling of, wow, what a miracle. It doesn't have to just arise out of nowhere. It can start with something external, like, you know, watching the Olympics, you know, and seeing somebody who just manages through grit and hard work to get some amazing thing done without dying, you know, from one of the many ways you could die in all those Olympic sports. You know, you could be in the forest and you just like, wow, overwhelmed by the grandeur of nature. Or you can, you know, being in front of something like the 10,000 gates in Kyoto or the Notre Dame or something where you're like, whoa, look what people can create when they're really, really inspired. So once you start to get that feeling of awe, it's like, it's not really serving a purpose, it just is. It's just purposeless. And in my experience, when you let yourself have that feeling, it leads inevitably to gratitude. You know, just, you're paying attention to the beauty that's around you, and you're feeling a response to it. To me, that's basically what a spiritual experience is. And I think that's what religious celebrations are fundamentally about. I mean, when you hear somebody talking about worshiping God, to me, the way I interpret that is that simply that's an expression of being awed and grateful for the miracle of being alive. You know, the God language is, you know, that's our way of kind of trying to take an experience that's ineffable and unexpressible and put it in language that we can understand. But the words are not really the real thing. The experience is the real thing. So the spiritual question here, I think, is how willing are we to let ourselves have that experience? Are we willing to let ourselves feel and celebrate the grandeur of life itself? Are we willing to acknowledge and embrace without guilt or shame how lucky we are to be here with each other? And are we willing to open our minds and our hearts to the people who are around us to help inspire them and support them when they need the energy or the solace or just the strength to go on? I think confronting these questions, that's the real spiritual practice. And it's not simple or easy because, first of all, you have to accept at some level that you deserve it. And in, again, a country founded by Puritans where the notion of original sin, which goes back even further than Christianity, of course, is so pervasive, where we kind of have this sense that there's something inevitably wrong with it. We have to believe that grace is real. We have to experience that we are whole enough and deserve enough to really be here and to celebrate. And it doesn't mean we don't turn our hearts and our minds and our energy and our money to others. It doesn't mean that at all. But it means we do it from that place of abundance, not from a place of scarcity. And the other thing is, at least in my experience, when you open yourself to joy and to love and to devotion, you also open yourself to every other human feeling there is. You just can't pick and choose. I have tried. You can't just be happy and not ever risk being unhappy. It just doesn't work. So what I love about the process of going through this, and thanks to Deb for bringing me along on this, is I realize I'm very pro-celebration. You know, I think we ought to find ways to celebrate and do it all the time as a practice. I was remembering the other day, I was, a number of years ago, I don't even know how many, 15 years ago, something like that, I went on a trip to India right around Christmas with a friend of mine, and we left from the Erie Airport. And in the Erie Airport at the time, there was this giant animatronic Santa that would sing Christmas carols at you. It was very creepy, but kind of fun. You know, it was, you know, it's expressed the joy of the season. Anyway, we got on a plane, we flew to, you know, Detroit, Amsterdam, Delhi, and then we got on a train. We went to Varanasi, the holy city on the Ganges, where people go to for all kinds of reasons for pilgrimages. And you know, it took a long time to get to this. We were going to this hotel. The streets were too narrow, we couldn't drive, we had to walk up to the hotel, get in finally this little lobby in this little hotel, and there's these pictures of all of these gurus, Indian gurus around the top, and the same animatronic Santa singing Christmas carols at us. I'm like, And it was kind of explained to me that Hinduism can be like that, you know? I was like, a celebration, okay, you know, bring it on, you know? I kind of love that feeling, you know? It's like open-hearted welcoming of the spirit, no matter where it comes from. So I think this sort of celebration, this open-hearted joy at the experience of the moment, I think it really connects us with each other, helps us experience our kinship with everything else that's alive, and helps us kind of expand ourselves to realize that we are part of something huge and something amazing and something very diverse and yet something that's very much a whole. I think it can take a leap of faith to get there. But fortunately, we have each other and we have music and we have dance and we have other sorts of, and we have nature, we have other sorts of reminders all the time that we can, that can help us to get to that point. And I think that realizing that we're really all in this together, that we're fundamentally alike, that we're all connected, that the universe is calling us to humility and to gratitude. That's the way to gain the strength and the wisdom we all need to face the challenges that life inevitably is going to bring us. May it be so, and amen.